All right. So there are two, well, there were two handouts. Now there's one. I had the leftovers from last week, which we're still working through this week. We only got halfway through the volume I gave you last week. There are multiple pages. And we were talking about the next phase of the Sermon on the Mount, which is Jesus just kind of laying out, here's what it looks like. This law versus what he's come to fulfill versus what the people understood and what they had been taught. You have heard it said, but I say to you, is the refrain that we're digging through. And we're reminded Jesus didn't come to get rid of anything. It's very clear the Old Testament was pointing directly to him. And all those different uses of the law, all the different phases of the law, even the civil, the ceremonial, the moral, he has fulfilled all of those in his life, death, and resurrection. And so they're not gone, they're completed. And he's building those into the citizens of his kingdom. The moral part of the law is eternal and always valid. And that's what still holds to us. It's not these external things. And that's what he's begun to talk about. And he's really taking his culture and the Jewish people to task in this section we're looking at. And he's got six antithesis type of settings that he's laying out that are the touch points for his day, at least in his mind as he sees it. And the first one we looked at last week was you shall not murder. All right, and we dug into that. Let me see if this will work. But here's the layout. I made this one up to kind of help us connect the two sections from last week into this week. We'll see how far we get this week. But it's all one point. It's about being pure in heart, a Christian's righteousness. He said our righteousness has to be better than the Pharisees. And the Pharisees, we've made them out to be the big bad bullies in Jesus' day, but you know, when you looked at them, they looked really good. They were the church folks. They had their acts together, it would appear, from the human standpoint. And so for Jesus to say, your righteousness has to be better than the Pharisees, a lot of people, when they heard that, just slumped their shoulders, I'm sure, and thought, well, I can't do that. I don't know what world they live in, but it's not the world I live in. My world's tough. And Jesus is trying to get the point across to them that their righteousness has to come from he himself. They can't work it out. He's going to give them his righteousness. And as his character takes over in their lives more and more, that righteousness is seen in the way they do life. And in God's heavenly courts, their righteousness is secured in the book of life because of what Jesus has done. And so in that sense, it's going to be fuller and more complete and truly following the law because the Spirit of God is enabling it. So here are the six antithesis examples that Jesus picks out at this point. The first one, murder, we talked about last week. It's not about the outward piece of the law. Just don't kill somebody. And we talked about murder. It's a specific word used there. It's premeditated killing of a person, a human being, with revenge in mind. It's not war, although assassination is included in this murder idea. Suicide is included in murder. You don't have the power to even premeditatedly harm yourself in that manner. God has life. It's not about what happens in battle. It's not about accidentally killing someone. That has its own issues. In a heated argument, you get in a fight and you punch somebody and, you know, crush their nose up into their skull. That happens. I've never done it myself. But I read books, you know. The point is the murder, this premeditated, thoughtful, and planned killing of another human being out of revenge is what's behind it. And Jesus says that's not the issue. Very few people have done that. You and I don't deal with that issue, so we can check that box off and feel good about ourselves. And Jesus says that you've missed the point. You've heard it said, but they've misunderstood it. Let me tell you, it's about reconciliation with your brothers and sisters. That you forgive, that you have a heart that does not seek to go after revenge, but rather you uphold life in every element, even your speech. The way you bring life into your relationships is what's in view here. It's about an internal heart issue. And when Jesus goes straight to the heart in each one of these categories, we realize we've got no defense. We are exposed. And that's what he wants us to be. That's what the law does. It exposes our internal heart issues so that his healing power and grace can be extended and transform us from the inside out. Lust and adultery, we're going to pick up. Fun day. It's about purity of heart. It's not your outward action of breaking these things with your body. It's what are you playing with in your heart? What are you teasing out in your imagination? It starts there. Divorce. We're going to look at the different views of Jesus' day. Easy divorce, difficult divorce, but beyond that, it's about upholding the sanctity of marriage. How do you view your marriage? How do you view marriage in general, as a single person or a married person? Are we viewing this in the way God intends? Oaths. It was in God's name. And Jesus said, it doesn't matter what name you use or don't use, let your yes be yes, your no be no. You need to have integrity of speech so that when you say something, you follow through and people trust that. That's transformative. Retaliation and revenge. We're talking about justice. Sorry, I didn't check it. Justice and legal rights. We are bent on defending ourselves and having our rights and being upset when people hurt us. But Jesus says there's something more than that. How about let's let justice rule? And you know, you have legal rights, but you don't have to exercise them. Having a pure heart that's following after Jesus considers the needs and position of others even over your own needs and rights. And then our enemies. He's going to be talking about loving enemies rather than hating them. And having humility in this. This is the authority of Jesus. What he's saying, the citizens of the kingdom will look more and more like. That is transformative as an individual, as he takes over your life and in society. And the people on the other side can't help but take note. All right, that's what we're going to be digging into with the time we've got this morning. And we are at Matthew 5, 27 through 30. You shall not murder. Commit adultery, sorry. That's the bottom of page 2 of last week's handout. So if you got this week's handout, just stuff it aside. Keith, did you bring your handout from last week back? You get a 0 for your homework grade. Anybody else not bring theirs? I didn't tell you it was a homework grade, so you get a free pass today. But I'm sorry, we ran out of the extra copies I had. So if you can look with a neighbor or a friend, that's fine. But I've got all of it up here that was on the sheet I gave. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lustful intent has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. For it's better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off, throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than that your whole body go into hell. Well, that's a famous type of illustration and saying. And let's talk about what it really means. Jesus is giving us the true interpretation. And this is one of the big ten, no adultery. We talked last week about the commandments. When he's quoting directly from the commandments, as it is here, it's two words. Lo, adultery. Lo means no, emphatically. No adultery. There's no categories that you can excuse underneath, except for in this case, murder was the same way. He's dealing with not the act only, which is what the people of his day and generations before had put up. As long as you don't physically go there, you're okay. And Jesus, once again, takes it straight to the heart. It's not only the act of adultery, but also includes lustful looks, lustful imaginations. We tease things out. How far do they go? If they go anywhere, it's too far. Jesus is reminding his people the law is not about the outward actions only. Those are the obvious things. He says it's far deeper than that. It's your heart. Is your heart like your father's, or is it like, well, it's like your father's, your father in heaven, or your father the devil, he said at other times. Which one is it? And this is the heart of the citizen of the kingdom. I'm giving you a new heart. Adultery can be committed in your heart and your mind, not merely your body. And that is a hard statement for our culture today. And when you look at these categories, there are a few that human beings, we're still dealing with this all the time. They are always constants in human society. Any sexual practice that is immoral indeed is obviously immoral in look and thought. I think that's logic for you and me. And Jesus is trying to play that out here and making the statement. And so here's the relationship between the heart, the eyes, which leads to the illustration he gives in 29 through 30 that we read. There's a relationship between what we see and what we feel in terms of how we act out. And in 29 through 30, when he says, look at that. If your right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. If your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off, get rid of it. It's better to get rid of one part of your body than your whole body be subjected to Gehenna, hell, the fires of hell. It's one of the terms that is used in the scriptures for hell. He's talking about dealing with the point of entry of sin. Let's get it clear. He's not saying, okay, cut your hand off. That's been the way it's been interpreted in cultures throughout the world. You know, it's still in the Middle East in some places. You steal something, your hand gets cut off. That's just makes sense. Jesus is not trying to say, pluck your eye out. We have to be careful when we're reading the scriptures to read illustrations, parables. It's not always literal. We have to be wise in how we handle scriptures. Jesus is obviously not saying maim yourself. He's talking about something much deeper. Don't cut your hand off. Just let's deal with sin where it's coming in. If it's something your hand wants to take, if it's something you want to look at, then where are the moral sentries that you're going to put into your life that need to be there to help you not stumble into sin through those actions, through those thoughts? If it's your eyes, don't look. If it's your hand, don't touch. If it's your feet, don't go. We were talking this morning before most of you got here, and I'm pleased to see most of you are sitting in the seats that you've assigned for yourself every week. We are people of habit, creatures of habit. We sit the same seats. So, you know, in my classroom, when I don't give assigned seats, they assign seats for themselves, and they know where they're supposed to sit. And they get angry with one another if somebody sits in their seat. It's hysterical. And church is the same way. Our lives are this way. We get into habits and patterns, and in some cases, that's great. I'm in a healthy pattern of running. I love it. It's a lifestyle change to do it regularly. I feel good. When I don't do it, I don't feel good. I feel better when I've exercised and eaten right. That's not always been the case. But there are habits we do that are not healthy. There are patterns we have in our life that are destructive, either immediately or over the long term. And Jesus is saying these habits, these pieces of your body that will lead you into sin in your heart have moral sentries. Do you have a checkpoint that waves its hands at you and says, you don't go there. You're approaching a dangerous spot. Maybe for you, you don't need to go to certain places. You know, I find my memory banks are, when I go home, there are places in my hometown that, you know, when I drive by a certain spot, it's like, ooh, I remember what happened there. And there's a whole emotive feeling that comes back, right? In our day and time now, it's Do we watch where we go? Do we watch what movies we see? I watched a movie last week, and I thought about it. Do I really want to watch this? I hadn't watched the movie in a long time. It was Joker. Anybody heard of Joker? All my students were talking about it. They loved it. And I was kind of on the fence. I kind of like Joaquin Phoenix, but he's weird. And I watched it, and I just about couldn't finish. I had to fast forward through it. It was so dark and depressing. And a horrible commentary on society, but where many people live. But I found myself just feeling yucky for a day. Just because the weight of it. I don't need to watch movies like that. It's not good for me. It's not healthy. My son's this way. He has a sensitive spirit. And there are just some things that he doesn't need to watch. And I've gotten to that way. I tell my students now, it's like, I don't have the emotional energy to try to dig out of the hole it puts me in. Right? Maybe it's certain music that leads you down a wrong path, students or adults. I listen to music all the time when I hang around with certain people. It's better to forego some experiences now. It's better to forego some sort of good experiences now in order to enter life eternal. The eternal is better than time. Purity is better than cultural acceptance. Do whatever it takes to ensure life in Christ. That's what Jesus is saying. Whatever it takes, you do that. It's worth it. It really is. We're talking about that. We have no idea just how worth it is. It is difficult and a struggle to say no or to not go there when everybody else seems to be doing it and they're fine with it. It may be an issue that's not a problem for them, but it is a real stumbling block for you. And to say, no, I'm not going to put myself in that circumstance. It's difficult. But we're reminded that this life that Jesus is talking about is so much better than we can ask or imagine. It is going to be so worth it to live in life now and to live with purity and to be transformed and shaped by God's Spirit in this manner. But He uses our thoughts and efforts and the community. Remember, this is about the community of faith, not just individuals. He uses us together to encourage one another and to hold one another accountable as we go through it. Any thoughts, questions on that one? Trying to keep it even. All right. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the ground of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. All right, this one is really close to the heart. And so let's just acknowledge right away that there is nobody in this room that has not been impacted by divorce. Either personally, you have been through divorce. I know a number of folks. And it is painful. It doesn't matter what happens. It has been a painful, painful experience that doesn't end. Because that person's still alive. They're not dead. Grief can be dealt with a death much better than when the person's still walking around. Some of you have parents that have been divorced, and that has marked your growing up years. Siblings divorced, and you've seen the destruction and the pain that it creates. That is not the intent God has, but this is reality in a fallen, broken world. So Jesus is in no way trying to heap guilt upon people that are undergoing the pain that this creates. He's acknowledging the reality of the way human life is worked out in a fallen, broken world. The whole Sermon on the Mount is Jesus, his manifesto of the kingdom life, in the midst of a fallen, broken world. That's why these antithesis statements are here, because this is the reality. I often say in counseling, you are not responsible for what has been done to you or what you've experienced in that sense, but you are responsible for how you move forward in it. So wherever you are on that line, hear Jesus' words of love and care and comfort here when he's talking about their idea of divorce of the day. He's dealing with the realities of their day and their rules and their expectations. He's upholding the sanctity of marriage for all human society, whether single or divorced. It's the institution of marriage. When pastors do weddings, we say, you know, this is something instituted by God. And Jesus affirmed it. His disciples, his apostles put it forward. It's for the blessing and benefit, not merely of the man and the woman, but also for all human society. This is a husband, wife, and God are the triangle that works. That's the basis, one of the basic pieces of the way God has created human society to function healthily. He's going to deal with divorce big time in Matthew 19. So if you want to look forward to read there, he really digs into that issue. But he's not dealing with all the ins and outs in this point. He's trying to make the main point of what do we do with this divorce that's reality in our lives. He's dealing with the heart, remember. There are two schools of thought in Jesus' day, rabbinical schools of thought. Remember, you have heard it said is a way of tipping off. Jesus is not affirming, but he's referencing these two main schools of thought usually. Rabbis who have taught throughout the years and generations that have been handed down. The Shammai is the conservative rabbinical school. And they say divorce only due to unseemly or indecent act. And of course, this is from Deuteronomy 24:1, where God allows through Moses divorce. Not that it's God's plan, but because it's the reality of broken human beings. It's allowable. It's not necessary. You don't have to invoke your right to a divorce if you're the injured party. You know, sometimes staying in and seeing a marriage healed really shows great blessing of God's power. But the Shammai group said, you only divorce to unseemly or indecent acts. That would be tend to be more in line with, I think, the spirit of Deuteronomy 24. Hillel is the rabbinical school of thought that's very liberal in his day, and it's any cause whatsoever. Any and every reason. It could be bad cooking. You got offended. This is the easy out. And you just present that divorce and you're out. And she's out. Remember, this is in a patriarchal society where the husband would be the main ruler. And divorce was not to deal with the issues of breaking up of a marriage. The divorce was to protect the wife. The divorce was to help the woman who was going to be left alone and to protect that and protect the honor and sanctity of God's name and his character. Now we've got anybody and everybody. The ones who seek divorce, it's equal husband and wife these days, I think. Is that the numbers? In some cases, it's more. And this is if you even get married in our culture. Most people don't get married. They don't need a sheet of paper to say they love each other, right? It was interesting even a couple weeks ago, listening on the radio on the way to school, the very liberal radio station was reading their comments of, you know, these people that live together, they don't stay together. Like they're shocked. It's like, yeah. And my daughter was in there. Do you remember that conversation at all? Yeah. I said, well, we know that. It's nice when you hear the culture saying it too. It's kind of obvious, but it takes a lot of pain to get to that owning up to it. So this is the reality within which Jesus is speaking to his people. You're kind of one of these or the other. And Jesus is going to show that Genesis 2:24, marriage is an ordinance created by God between male and female exclusively, cleaving as one flesh for as long as life lasts. Marriage is meant to be between a husband and wife, a man and a woman, for as long as you both shall live. Somebody dies, it's over. Marriage doesn't last forever. Human marriage doesn't. It lasts as long as this physical life is going on. And when one dies, that marriage covenant is over. It has been finished. But I also include for all time, because the institution of marriage, beyond human lifespan, marriage is one of those foundational pieces of human civilization that God has installed. And so we uphold marriage at any point for all of human time. If God meant for two to become one permanently, leave and cleave, that's a fusion that cannot be broken in God's sight. So when a judge says, well, you're broken up, does that really count? God still views human beings as married. Just because a judge says it, just because your spouse who wants out says it, doesn't mean God has changed his view. It's very sticky and difficult, isn't it? But we live in a fallen, broken world where those things really happen. And God is not afraid to be in our mess. His grace extends even through those things. And there are very clear parameters for biblical divorce. And many, I know even this room, have experienced that. And we're so grateful for God's grace in allowing that healing that can come and does come over time. But the reality is, here's what's laid out that Jesus wants us to see. If two people are put together, how can they separate again? They're one flesh. You don't rip them apart. When you do, it's not meant to be. It creates unnatural consequences. So what does sexual immorality mean? That's what Jesus mentions here. If you divorce for anything other than sexual immorality, porneia is the Greek word here, and it includes all illicit sexual intercourse or sexual activity. The word can refer to prostitution, extramarital sexual intercourse, paedophilia, promiscuity, homosexuality, lesbianism, incest, premarital sex, bestiality. There's a whole list of letters we have now that our culture says is fine. It's who I am. And God says no. It's very simple. But remember, this is what we're given as the way God intends human life to be lived in a family with His rulership over them. And God deals with our brokenness. These types of sins are forgiven by Jesus on the cross. And His righteous life is covering. But we're called to honor marriage in our life and in our actions. And I think I've got... the question is not then... Here's the bottom line for this one. It's not the details of all of divorce and remarriage and stuff like that. This isn't the place. Jesus isn't dealing with that. He's asking the question. Don't talk about how do we prevent falling into adultery or getting a divorce. That's what we tend to think of. Rather... let's look at it from the positive. How do we uphold and enhance marriage as God has given it? In those around me that are married? In my own marriage? What are we doing proactively to uphold and enhance that? That's where our hearts and minds need to be focused.
Chris?
Yes, ma'am?
If I could back you up for a minute. What did you mean when you said
In those cases, with the Hillel view, the wife would be left without a way to provide for herself.
Right.
When the husband left her, she had to, if she had grown children, then hopefully the oldest son would take care of her, perhaps, or she'd have to go back to her father's house. If not, she was stuck on the streets. And so what happens with the a divorce of this nature, any dowry that's given goes back to her. And so there's a financial covering that is there if she has nowhere else to go. Anybody got any other readings, thoughts on that, you all? That's the main idea. The woman was in a bad place regardless. And so it's meant to help protect her in that sense. so it's not done needlessly. And that she has a means of caring for herself when she's left alone. She can't get a job like today. Today, this no-fault divorce stuff. You know, in many cases, the women can provide more for themselves than the men can. And pursue that and go after that. And now, in today's day, with our laws, it's just you both 50-50 go. And good luck to you. And God is within the paternalistic structure is trying to care for the wife within this, as well as uphold his name, which is more important than anything, in the midst of it. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be much more protective than what we've got today.
Yeah.
Because the wife, it'd almost be nuts not to keep a job and pursue a career if the if there ends up with a divorce. You're going to, you might get alimony for a bit of time, but you're it's almost intentional to destroy the way Christian society and culture are set up.
Yeah. My aunt was divorced before I was born, and I watched my cousins. My grandmother helped raise kids with my aunt. We all lived within a half a mile of each other in the same neighborhood, and they had no contact with their dad whatsoever. He just ran off, and he paid alimony until the day they turned 18, and that was it. It was very painful. And they, you know, without the covering of family, which she had, and family business, so she had lots of means. And in terms of that, they didn't go without, but it was life was difficult. And we see that's just the reality of a broken human institution that's meant to be God's institution. We've taken it, made it our own, and changed the rules, and that's not... Jesus is saying this is not the intent. Let's get back to the intent and work towards that. Anybody else? Yeah.
So, I can understand why.
Yeah. Sure, absolutely. Yeah, these are the bottom line that were mentioned there. And this was just a... I just looked up in my Greek text what the general meaning, accepted meaning of the biblical use of porneia. And this is, I just wrote the definition down. You're talking about what Jesus... If you go to the Matthew 19 passage, he digs in further and, you know, abandonment can be a part of all these issues when you're talking about divorce. It's big and broad. But I think the main piece is just we're instead of thinking about our outs, how do we shift our hearts to think about how we're all in?
Well, I think of even when God accuses his people of being an adulterous people, even towards him.
Right. Yeah.
It makes me think that there's something bigger than this.
Yeah. In the Bible, you know, that's the big picture, and he's always dealing with that with his people. Marriage, the human institution, is given specifically to show us how united we are to Christ. He's our bridegroom. All the guys love it when I talk about this in Bible or theology. You got a husband, and his name's Jesus. And he is wooing you and pursuing you, and he's never going to let you go. And so marriage is primarily, first and foremost, not to be for our good and our pleasure and our joy. That's the secondary benefits that God plans for humanity. The first piece is that we might get an inkling of how united we are to him. And that relationship, that marriage relationship, can never be broken. It is sealed. And you can't get out. He's not going to let you. He loves you too much. And that's, Hosea chases after Gomer. Take to you a wife of immorality. And, you know, they have one kid together, and then she has kids with other men. And he's not the biological father, it would appear to be. And it's trying to show, this is how much God loves you and is committed to you. And that's what ought to be in view. And then, of course, we get all the other benefits and blessings of marriage that come with it. All right. Thank you all. Good comments. We ready? All right, today's sheet. So now, if you didn't get last week's sheet, today's sheet, we'll see how far we get in 10 minutes. Again, you've heard it that it was said to those of old, "You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for that is it is the throne of God, or by earth, for it is footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no." Anything more than this comes from evil, the evil one. Either it could be both of those. All right. This is about the oaths we and vows that we take in life and how we keep them. That's the key point here. Exodus 20, verse 7. That's one of the oaths that, or it's one of the Ten Commandments. Let's look that up. Somebody read that one real quick. And somebody look at Leviticus 19, 11, and 12 real quick so we can have those read. Those are going to be helpful to us. Exodus 27. Anybody got that one? This sword drills again. You got it? All right, read it. And somebody else keep looking at Leviticus 19.
"You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain."
That's one of the big ten. Do not take the Lord's name in vain. Vanity there means frivolous, like air, with disrespect, just kind of whatever. Like we use Jesus' name in our culture so often. It's a curse word, throwaway word. It means nothing. Because what they were doing was taking vows, and if you invoked God's name, Yahweh, or Adonai, or if you made your vow in that, you had to keep it. So they wouldn't do it. They'd say, "Jerusalem, I swear by my mother's grave, by Jerusalem, by anything else that might seem to have the appearance of holding them fast, but not God's name, because that's you couldn't do that." They were trying to figure out, how can I get out of this? It's like crossing your fingers. Have my fingers crossed behind my back. It doesn't count. This is human nature. Of Leviticus 19, 11, 12, who's got that one?
"You shall not steal. You shall not deal falsely. You shall not lie to one another. You shall not swear by my name falsely. And so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord."
Thank you. I included both of those verses because Leviticus 19 is the holiness code of Leviticus. And it's playing out much of this character of God. And stealing, oath-taking, all of these things are all related. You can't separate any of the commandments and God's character out. And when you make a vow and don't keep it in God's name, it is profaning God's name. And so what they did was just decide, we won't take God's name at all. We'll just cut him out of it. And of course, they're cutting him out of it in their intent to keep it for what's convenient for them. And Jesus is just saying, just keep your oath. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Follow through. It's okay to say no. You don't have to say yes to everybody and everything. Y'all realize that? I find that so many of us in Christian circles, we've got this thing that's been taught to us that we're supposed to say yes to everybody. We're supposed to be generous with our time, with our money, with it. But there, you can say no. If you've got a bigger yes, you say no to certain things. That's healthy. That's good. You can't do it all. Churches can't do it all. You know, that's why I love the idea of missionaries like what Mercy does. You focus on a few people that you can dig into and do life with, and you say yes to them, and that allows you with confidence to say no to all the other great opportunities that are out there. There are other churches that can take care of that. There are lots of things you can say no to because you've got a yes? And you know, do you have a yes? And then if you've got a yes, are you keeping that promise, that vow? Whatever it is. That's what Jesus is getting at. Do what you say you're going to do and follow through. That's integrity of speech. People can trust you. That's a big deal. It's in most societies, you got to remember we're Americans, built on a Judeo-Christian background. So truth is still important to us when convenient. But at least we know that's still kind of a value for society. Jesus says it's integral to who I am and to who you are as my people. It's not debatable. We do truth. People were making false oaths without invoking God's name, so they wouldn't have to keep it. Do people see us as men and women of integrity? That's really the issue we have to think of. And when we say yes to something, I had to say yes to something. I said yes to something 2 weeks ago at school with some of the senior boys. Would you be the chaperone for this event? Yeah, I'd love to do that. That would be great. And then I found out, after I'd said yes to that, that it's the same night as the father-daughter dance that my daughter and I go to every year. I had to go back and say, I'm sorry. I have a bigger yes that I've said yes to every year. I'm going to have to say no. Thankfully, they understood. They all the girl students in the room were like, oh, man, so sweet. But I take my commitment seriously. And to go back on it was painful, but you say yes to the right things. You have bigger yeses. And that's easy, but we're talking about in business, in legality issues. Can we be people of their word? That is huge in our culture. When you're seen as someone that can be trusted. And it's Christ in you that they're seeing. Let your yes be yes, your no be no, James 5:12. Even Jesus, when the high priest, he was standing before him in a false trial at night. Witnesses couldn't agree. His life is on the line. I abjure you by the Most High God. Are you the Christ? Jesus was faithful. He was put on the spot at that moment. And he wasn't going to be quiet. He had been silent all along to everybody. You've said it so. And you will see the Son of Man coming on the right hand. With the clouds and power and glory from heaven. So when God's name is even invoked wrongly by the high priest, Jesus takes that seriously and follows through. This is what I've come to do. This is who I am. And here's the deal. It doesn't matter if somebody else doesn't see the fingers crossed behind your back. If you can finagle your way out, all of life is lived in full view of God. God sees it all. Not merely the way you follow through. He sees your heart when you're making these yeses and nos. So, don't your yes be yes and your no be no. We're going to stop right there. We're going to stop right there. Any thoughts, questions on that? We can. Bingo. How about that? That was my alarm.
It just reminds me of there's so much that we intellectually assent to. Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But when it comes to following through,
right,
that's where we come short.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the way you brought that to my to that question, it made me think of Sandy Wilson, the pastor I served under on a couple of occasions. He was in Memphis for 20 plus years, and he was in steel sales before becoming a Christian and becoming a pastor. And he told the story that when he became a Christian, he was confronted with these issues and just truthfulness in his business accounts. And he said, I started being honest with my expense accounts. And I didn't spend things I wasn't supposed to spend money on. You know, I didn't buy them. I didn't do certain things. I recorded everything faithfully. And his boss called him in and said, what are you doing? Because that was the expected way of doing business. And that's what everybody else did. And said, you're throwing everything off. What are you doing here? You know, you don't need to tell me this. You know, and he was struck that his honesty and the things he said he was doing, he actually wrote down on his expense and his finances followed it, and he wasn't hiding things anymore. It made a big difference and got him a talking to by his boss. Sometimes, you know, letting your yes be yes, your no be no, having integrity of speech, letting your heart transformation show forward in your actions. People don't like that. You got to remember, people in this world don't like that. And it ought to get people's attention in a good way, and it also ought to stir people up to anger and hostility for those who don't know Christ. And we shouldn't be surprised when that happens. That's part of the joy of, wait a minute, I belong to Jesus, and I'm suffering for doing righteousness, which is worth a lot. I think that's where one of the ways we struggle. Or we're happy to go through it, but we still, I know I do, I grumble. I'm doing the right thing. And that's missing the point. So, well, next week we'll finish this with retaliation and revenge and love for enemies. And then we'll move into chapter 6, which is, we'll get to the Lord's Prayer and these disciplines that God has laid out for us. And we'll just kind of go week to week from there. We're still sort of on target. I stopped putting the target out there. You don't need to see it. We'll just keep going.